Hello and welcome to this special SearchSecurity.com podcast. I'm Eric Parizeau. It's great to have you with us. In today's podcast, we'll engage in some fact or fiction discussing potential tactics for stopping mobile malware in the enterprise. Joining me today is Lisa Pfeiffer. Lisa is president of Core Competence, Inc., a Pennsylvania-based networking and security consulting firm. Thanks for joining us today, Lisa.
Thank you, Eric. I'm glad to be here.
Before we begin, I want to mention that this podcast is part of our SearchSecurity.com security school, which you can visit at any time by navigating to SearchSecurity.com/security school. Lisa, let's set the stage before we begin our discussion. In a very short period of time, mobile malware has gone from being a secondary concern for enterprise information security teams to being a top priority threat that needs to be addressed. Why has this change happened so quickly?
Eric, you're right. This actually has changed in a really short period of time. The first iPhone Trojan appeared in 2009. The first Android Trojan appeared last August. But by this spring, you see, it saw events like Google removing Droid Dream from 50,000 phones. By June of this year, Android had jumped to first place in the mobile malware race, and the number of new malware infections, mobile malware infections in the wild, is growing at an alarming rate. I think the reason is that malware follows money. Today's app-happy mobile user installs dozens of programs, often of unknown origin, questionable integrity. And I think that, combined with the trend to enable business use of bring-your-own-devices, has been creating a pretty lucrative target for malware writers. So I think that is really the reason that we're seeing the growth, and that is why IT is finding it challenging to detect and block mobile malware on devices where they don't have ownership.
Okay, let's quickly explain how this will work for our listeners. I'll read a statement, and Lisa, you'll tell me whether that statement should be answered with fact or fiction, and then explain why. So let's get started. Here's our first one. Fact or fiction: enterprises should provide a recommended app catalog for mobile device users.
Eric, this one is definitely fact. It's often overlooked, but it's practice and can help iPhone and Android users avoid malware. Now, Apple and Google both have signing and approval processes for the public apps that are distributed through the App Store and the Android market. Apple's process is far more stringent than Google's, but neither of them actually focus on identifying malware. Both have approved and then later pulled dozens of applications that were found to be operating in unauthorized ways. IT can actually help users keep their iPhones and Androids safe by recommending tested applications that meet common business and personal needs. Even a manually distributed list could give workers some guidance, but it's more effective to publish an application catalog of links to safe applications. If you can make it more convenient to find and install good applications, I think workers will be less likely to try those unknown applications and come across either poorly written or malicious code. In fact, many mobile device managers, or MDMs, offer application management tools that can facilitate this on a larger scale. MDMs can install web clips that notify users of public apps and updates, while MDM agents can actually automate the installation of either mandatory or optional enterprise apps, along with license keys and also the settings that are needed to secure the operation of those recommended apps.
Let's move on to the next statement. Fact or fiction: while ideal, it's generally not feasible or helpful for enterprises to disable mobile device application installation from unapproved sources.
Eric, this one is definitely fiction. It's entirely possible to block installation of mobile apps from unapproved sites authored by unidentified and possibly malicious developers. This practice can be very helpful because all iOS malware to date and the vast majority of Android malware has been distributed by unauthorized third-party application markets. I'll give you some examples. Jailbroken iPhones and iPads, they can install apps from a third-party market called Cydia, that those applications actually didn't pass muster at the Apple App Store. And clearly the risk of malware among unapproved and unsigned apps is higher. That doesn't mean all Cydia applications are malware, just that the risk is greater there. And that is why many companies forbid business use of jailbroken iPhones. bans like that can be enforced by an MDM agent that checks a device for signs of compromise and then takes an action. Examples would be warning the user, blocking corporate email or VPN access, maybe de-enrolling a device, or even wiping the offensive device. You can do something similar on Android devices that have been rooted to install applications that require low-level access. The Android market is actually full of applications that require root access to run. So just sticking to the Android market is not enough. However, it's not necessary to root an Android application to install a non-market app. There's actually just one setting on an Android phone that users can actually uncheck in order to allow that installation. And so MDM agents can be used to enforce that setting and then check for signs of rooting.
Lisa, here's another one. Fact or fiction, blacklisting unwanted apps isn't recommended because new unwanted apps surface all the time.
Well, you might be surprised that my answer for this one is fiction. Beyond recommending known good apps, it can be helpful to identify known bad apps, those that cause instability, apps that access risky device features or maybe sensitive data, or applications that just chew up battery or bandwidth or sap productivity. Now, I'll admit that app blacklists are notoriously difficult to maintain. They're also especially sensitive when it comes to BYO devices. Nevertheless, I do think that a well-designed and maintained blacklist can be helpful, and I'll give you some examples. When new mobile Trojans are discovered, they usually correspond to a set of app IDs. Given the ability to query installed app IDs, an employer could spot potentially infected phones and tablets right away, warn users, and temporarily block their VPN access. After a few days, current inventories might be used to generate a report of non-compliant devices, enabling individual follow-up. For blacklisted apps that were actually deemed to be very high risk, you could take more immediate actions, such as wiping a corporate account to limit your network or data exposure.
Lisa, just to follow up briefly, that makes sense, but from an ethical or even logistical standpoint, should enterprises really take on the role of deciding what personal apps users can install on their own devices?
Well, it is a tricky question, but when devices are used for businesses, I think yes. Mobile device managers that can enforce user or group blacklists give IT even more power to actually apply policy to BYO devices. For example, an endpoint with a potentially unwanted app might be given more limited access, maybe internet-only access or virtual desktop access. And in this way, some users or groups can be given permission to use riskier apps over the corporate network, while other users can actually still use those personal applications. It's just that they don't actually get the permission to use them over the corporate network. And if they run an application that's known to be actual malware, perhaps they can be cut off from business access.
We've got two more to go. Here is our next statement. Fact or fiction, network anti-malware should be used to block Trojan back channels.
This one is definitely fact. On mobile devices, traditional malware is taking a back seat to malware that's delivered by some new vectors, most notably SMS phishing. In such attacks, that phishing message and the malware download actually might occur over a provider's cellular network, but it still results in an infected phone or tablet that brings malware back home to the corporate network. Now, preventing the infection would have been better, but network-based anti-malware can still be used to block those back channels, commonly launched by Trojans to phone home to the command and control center. This can be done using a unified threat management or next-generation firewall to inspect outbound traffic at the corporate network egress. In fact, this practice is not particularly new. It's not specific to mobile malware, but it's becoming increasingly important as more and more traffic is sent by mobile devices that don't themselves run antivirus scanners. Now, for example, a next-gen firewall can use deep inspection to look into that port 80 or 443 traffic that leaves your network. A next-gen firewall that's identity aware can actually tell IT which users and devices are responsible for sending the traffic. And that gives you the ability to do something like quarantine a user's bring your own device without affecting that same user's corporate laptop.
Lisa, here's our last one. Fact or fiction, enterprises should do whatever they can to insulate corporate data from personal apps.
This one I think is fact, although it's somewhat contentious. Let's assume that at least a few less than savory personal apps do make it past your whitelists and your blacklists, your network DNA malware. The question then becomes, what can you do to limit risk to enterprise applications and to enterprise data that's running on the same device or stored on the same device running those personal apps? One practice that's really gaining traction is self-encrypting business applications that either don't store data at all or that store data in a secure container. Mobile operating systems do sandbox applications. They try to isolate data, but you've probably seen that long laundry list of permissions that are given when you install an Android app. iOS apps tend to be less explicit, but they do often share the phone's contact list and location, some other data, and commingling personal and business data like this can result in accidental leakage. So, what can you do about that? Using an application like, say, a NitroDesk Touchdown or Good for Enterprise, and there are several others, can provide a secure container that unlocks enterprise data by entering additional enterprise credentials, and that data is encrypted with more powerful ciphers. That's often in addition to whatever full device encryption might be turned on. Insulating corporate data that way makes it easier for IT to remove the data if the device is lost or stolen, and it makes it easier to protect the data from snooping by personal apps.
Lisa, as we wrap things up, just to recap from a technology standpoint, what new technology is essential for enterprises to put these mobile malware defense tactics into place, and how much can be done without necessarily making a new technology investment?
Well, the practices we talked about are really just a few of the ways that IT can assert app governance over bring your own endpoints without ownership of the device and without imposing really heavy-handed restrictions. Of course, that always depends on the policy you put into place. Such practices, though, some of them, examples would be recommended app catalogs or network malware scanning. You can put those into place without any new technology. You probably have what you need to do that right now. Security policies are always more effective when they're automated, and that's why I recommend using new technologies like MDM to transparently enforce compliance to whatever rules you put into place.
All right, that'll do it for this Fact or Fiction podcast. Lisa Pfeiffer of Core Competence, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Eric.
For more learning materials, don't forget to visit the other lessons in our security school at searchsecurity.com/security school. And we have many more information security podcasts for you on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. We thank you for listening. I'm Eric Parizeau. Stay safe out there.